RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thank you for taking the time to join us on today. And as always, a special welcome to those of you that are listening for the first time. We're going to have another break in the EQ series. I just think it's important to do it. And I have another guest today for Talking Shop. Today, I have with me the one, the only, Shanae Chapman, also known as the Nerdy Diva, and she will spend some time talking about that as we go forward. Thank you for joining me on today, Shanae, for this Talking Shop session. And as always, I like to have people introduce themselves. I tell you who's here, but we'll let her talk about herself. So we're going to start off there on today. So Shanae, tell us who you are. And as one of my peers in the industry likes to say all the time, tell everybody why they should care.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, I've been following your work for years. Very big fan and definitely honored to be on the show today. Yes, I am a senior UX researcher and designer. I also am an entrepreneur. So Nerdy Diva is my business. And within Nerdy Diva, I share information about inclusive research and design in the UX space. Also sharing that information via workshops and speaking engagements and podcasts like this one, really trying to change the culture and help us be more aware and intentional about ethics and about diversity and inclusion when we are building products that are serving people globally across the world. So that's something I'm very passionate about. Also love sharing that women, Black women, people of color, LGBT folks, belong in technology, belong in UX, belong in the spaces where decisions are being made. And part of the work I do at Nerdy Diva is sharing about UX careers to people who are underrepresented and making sure they have information about how to level up in their careers and how to be successful and know that they are not alone and that they have resources and support here for them. And lastly, angel investing, so important for underrepresented founders. So Black people, people of color, women, LGBT folks often don't get a lot of funding for their big ideas and their projects that they are working on. And a lot of these projects have like social innovation, social impact influences as well. And that's something that, you know, we need to hear more about those opportunities and provide more access and more capital. So that's something that I also am partnering with other organizations on to help level up the playing field in that area as well. So, yeah.
That is fantastic. And I mean, as you were giving that spiel, it just made me think again how I often talk about how that UX isn't just about the work. You just mentioned several things that it's UX, but it's not the work, but it's related. And if people are not aware, and if people are not really taking a genuine interest and deliberately engaging, then that arena, it becomes a blind spot.
Definitely. So to speak,
for many people. I want to come back in a little bit and talk about inclusive design. I know it's a passion point for you, and I want to hear more about that, and I think the listeners do too. Before we get there, though, let's get into a little bit more of Shanae's story, because there's one thing I like to have people talk about, because the stories differ, and it's funny because people just get into UX today because they just sit there and they have a little epiphany, and I think I want to get into UX, and they do. That's not always the case for everybody. Share with the listeners today, how did you get into UX, Shanae? What was the thing, the light bulb moment for you? What lit your fire? Things of that nature.
Yeah, you know, I have always been someone who had multitude of interests and found psychology interesting, found communication interesting. I started my career on more of the communication and marketing side because that's what I went to college for. My bachelor's degree is in communication, and I took design courses as electives. Yeah. And that's how I learned about design and the ability to create messages and get it out into the world via graphic design, via web design. And I was hooked. I was like, oh, this is it. This is where the party at. And it, you know, and it was like, it's fun, it's exciting. And you get to share knowledge with people all across the world. And that fascinates me to this day. And also being someone who just loves to organize and loves to understand how things work, really understanding systems and how they can be utilized and be, more cohesive and how to share that information out to people in a way that is relevant and makes sense to them. So that really is how I came into the field via understanding communication, psychology, taking design courses as a college student. And then, I was doing the UX work before I knew the terminology. I was interviewing stakeholders. I was identifying personas. Yep. I was using that information to make updates to websites. And I understood how to do some of this work, but I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't understand why I was doing it, so to speak. So I went to grad school in Boston. I went to Northeastern University. I did a master's in informatics. And as part of that degree, I actually took usability courses. So now I'm like, oh, okay, now I understand the terminology and what heuristics are and what these evaluations mean. And it's like, oh, okay. So it was like being the person who was like creating and now having the vocabulary and the awareness to describe why I was creating it and what the purpose was. And that's something that just took my career to another level. So that was something where I was like, okay, this is definitely where I want to be in this intersection between understanding people and technology and how do we bring this together in a meaningful way.
Yeah, that's something. And I hear a lot of discovery mode.
Yes.
This yes. And that.
And planting seeds. Yes.
And so important. Because you didn't enter blindly. You knew what you were getting yourself into, which is something I talk about a lot. And it was definitely a passion.
In some ways,
point.
Yes. In some ways, no.
Yeah. But enough to say, I want to do that.
Yeah. Definitely studied. And also, I was part of UXPA Boston when I was in grad school.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was a big resource for me as well. So I could actually talk to people who were in the field and listen to their case studies and understand how they were applying UX methods and what was working well for them and what wasn't. And so I would just ask questions like, hey, so what should I know? What should I study? And I would get different answers from different people. Some people would say, study design patterns. Make sure you understand how to do contextual interviewing, which was great because I learned a little bit from every person that I talked to. So yes. I think definitely building those relationships and networks has been crucial to me in my career as well.
That's fantastic. And nice building blocks. You actually even covered one of the other questions I had here, because when people come into the discipline, we talked even before we started recording today, we talked about how people have, they come into the discipline and we have to have an understanding of how it is we're going to learn and build our acumen. And we need to understand that it is a lifelong learning commitment. There's so many different things that will happen.
Absolutely.
To help build us up and help us become who we are.
As opposed, and it never ends. You're right, always doing
yes.
it.
It's yes, continuous. Yes. You know, the whole, you know, you can learn US in, I've heard as little as 9 days.
Oh my gosh.
I've heard six weeks. I've heard 6 months. I've heard 9 months.
And then make $170,000 a year. Ridiculous. You know, like, no big deal.
No. Folks, no. You can't. We say it all the time. You can't. It is a lifelong learning commitment.
That's right.
You never arrive, which is why there was somebody who posted something to remind it of this post on LinkedIn. Someone had said, every day I want to improve by 1%. And I'm thinking, it sounds cute. But if you increase by 1% or improve by 1% every day, to me, it still had an air of like the end of a journey. I just want to learn every day. Throw away the percentage. Learn.
I think it just depends on the person. Some people I have found really are attached to metrics.
They are.
That's the motivation for that person, then you go ahead. I salute you. But I agree. Yeah, like, I don't necessarily need the metrics. I am definitely more of like a qualitative researcher as well. Like, I really want to understand the motivations and the behavior and the outcomes. So like, it takes all types, and that's what makes this world so interesting and unpredictable. But just as long as you are continuing to learn, you go ahead. You
that's true.
Say whatever you need to say. Just keep doing it.
That's true. I will settle there too. Yeah, just keep getting better.
Yes,
I do think that, and this is me and my steadfastness maybe on this one, but eventually you'll learn, you'll just keep growing, and the 1% won't be a conscious thing that you're opting into. I just want to get better. What can
that's
I do?
Yeah.
What can I do today? What do I? And I'd even say go as far as identifying deliberate places of growth. Like for me, something like I've never had an opportunity to do UX with regard to augmented reality. I've never done that.
That is interesting. I would like to understand that as well. Yeah.
I've never done VR.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fortunate enough to have done some hardware related work where some of my background is not, it's not all digital. It's mostly digital, it's predominantly digital, but I've been able to work on some hardware as well too. So I think that those kinds of things, especially when we understand the pervasiveness of UX, that it does extend to a whole lot of arenas that people don't stereotypically consider, such as IVRs. And I know people who that's all they do is UX for IVRs. They work with the interactive voice response system.
God knows
they need it.
Oh, they need it badly. And that's really interesting to me because that touches on like natural language processing as well.
Yes.
And someone who just like loves understanding why language matters and the impact of language. I think it's really interesting when we start trying to build systems to convey emotion via language as well.
Yes. And I also know somebody else. I just thought of someone else who's doing UX with regard to AI. Man, what a world. I haven't had the privilege of doing that yet. So it's a big world. It's
Very, really
big world, and invite more people to it. But remember, when you grow, don't put a time limit on it. It's because you're gonna be disappointed if you do. because you're always going to discover something else to learn. And the journey's fun. The learning journey is really fun.
And it allows you to grow and expand and evolve over time in your career. So I've been lately working in developer experience and with APIs and understanding more about like cybersecurity and cloud services and understanding personas of very technical people, but who are building systems for general business users. So they have these language gaps in between and being able to understand how to communicate between, okay, your API developer has this tool. How do you actually, as someone who is on the like business analyst team, how do you actually use these APIs for your reports and for your systems and to get things done that interest you and matter to you? And how do you help each other grow this system so that it meets the user's needs? And that's really another space where I didn't know about 10 years ago. Wow. I was in the API space, you know? Yeah. So, but being in it now, it's really interesting to see it's still that foundational bedrock principles of understanding user-centered design and applying that process.
Yes.
It will take you to any of these other experiences, and you can grow it and you can evolve it and you can dissect it and make better experiences based upon what you already know.
Yes. Dynamite, dynamite, dynamite. This leads me to my next question. And this is another one of those, go back into the memories for this one. What's your fondest memory as a UX professional thus far?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Let's see. I had the privilege to work on MATLAB's first iteration of their cloud services. So MATLAB is an IDE for scientists and engineers who are coding different types of systems and they wanted to have the ability to use this IDE on the desktop. And had different systems from Linux, Mac, Windows, so experience design. So you're talking about different experiences, command line interfaces. So that was my first opportunity to work with how do you create an experience when you don't have a UI, when you just have a command line and you are sending messages to someone that, yes, you are successful or no, you are not successful. And here's an error message to help you get unstuck. So being able to understand holistically how a product family can work together and being able to work across different teams in Boston and Cambridge, UK, and being able to communicate effectively in order to get things done. So it's a seamless experience for the end user. That has been really one of the best projects I have been on. And I helped launch that first iteration of that product. So it was a really exciting experience.
Dynamite. And it makes me think about too, the intrinsic benefits, the intrinsic factors of working with UX. They have to give you a paycheck. That's the extrinsic stuff. What those joys, those little wins, those things that help us to feel better about what we do and what we contribute. That's just something I always like to always remind people to keep that on their radar. Always be focused on the intrinsic benefits because that's where the greatest joys will be because there's a lot of challenges in UX and intrinsic benefits really put a lot of wind in our sails, I found. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Every time I'm on a product, I think about what can I get out of this for my career? How could this be a portfolio sample for my career? Even if I'm having a challenging time working with the stakeholders, or even if for some reason the product does not get launched, I still have learned something from that experience. Yes. I still have a story. I still have a case study, a testimony. I still have something that I can share with people about how I have grown during this process. So thinking about how does this help me get to having more knowledge, more understanding. What do I want to learn? What do I want to do that I haven't done before? Are there methods I want to try that I haven't done before? Can I set up like a design studio session remotely? Can I set up ways to communicate with different teams and do like a cord sort to understand information architecture? Like, are there things that I can do that I haven't done previously that's going to help me grow my career?
Yes, yes. Now we're going to look at another, I'm going down the list as you can see here, jumping around a little bit, but a point of contrast. The best decision you ever made as a UXer. So we're getting into your own UX story here, I guess.
Oh, okay. Best decision. You know what? I think it definitely was when I transitioned from being more on the IT side. I worked at IBM and I was a UI testing specialist. That's what I came in as. And I was at the end of the software development cycle. So when all the changes had been made, I would go in, create end user test cases, and I would do regression testing and functional testing to understand if anything broke, and if anything broke, tell people what it was before it was launched into production, to the live environment. And I would find things naturally. I would find things, and I was growing my understanding of user experience. And I was like, well, there's so much here that needs to be improved. Like, we have these different components, and one piece of it was updated, but the whole workflow has not been changed. So I had so many ideas about how the whole system could be redesigned, and wanted to get more involved in that space and realized that I'm at the wrong point in the cycle. I need to be in the beginning of the cycle where people are more open and more receptive to doing discovery research, to creating concepts and trying out new ideas. At the end of the cycle where people are testing and ready to get it out the door, they're like, oh, that's cute, but we don't have time for that. Put that on the backlog. We don't have time. So okay, I'm not where I should be.
Right.
And I had not had a full-time UX position at that point, but I have been learning. I have been doing my own self-study. I've been going to USPA Boston events. I've been working on hackathons as a UX researcher and designer at IBM.
Wow, nice.
And freelancing. I was doing projects for nonprofits and for small businesses. So I've created ways to get more experience for myself, to build up a portfolio that led me to being able to take an opportunity as a UX contractor for a company called Kronos. And that was my first official UX job. That was a contract position. Right. I didn't know what's going to happen after 3 months, but I said, I know that this is where I need to be. I need to be on this side of the software development process. And I believe that this is going to be an opportunity to launch me to greater things in my career. And lo and behold, 3 months turned into 6 months, got a renewal on the contract. And then because I had that experience, it launched me to be able to go to work at a place that worked on MATLAB and products that were in this technical developer experience. And that was the starting point for me really transitioning into a full-time UX career.
That's amazing. And that's some phenomenal stuff that people need to hear, because you hear so many. I know you spend a lot of time talking to people that are up and coming in the discipline. I do the same. And you just encounter people that are all talking about their challenges at those initial times. And then here's a lesson, folks, for you to take away of what Shanae did. Sometimes you have to create opportunities for yourself.
That's right.
But with the work that you do. When I got started the same way, wasn't even focused on it. I just happened to be connected with a nonprofit that needed web design work done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was doing things like you did. I didn't know terminology. It wasn't called UX in 1995, but I was doing what I later came to know as information architecture. I was working on nomenclatures. I was working on taxonomies. I was doing guerrilla testing. I didn't know it was called guerrilla testing. I just wanted to make sure that things worked. So I went out and I tested it. So I was doing things that we now associate with UX, But sometimes things fall in your lap. Sometimes you just happen to be right place, right time. I happen to be right place, right time. I didn't plan that. And that's one of the challenges, I think, today, one of the major contrasts that a lot of people who got into UX earlier on, it just sort of fell in our lap, or some kind of opportunity came up and we didn't know that it was going to become what it became.
Yeah.
Whereas today, people sort of have an idea of where things can go, and their journey is quite different than a lot of ours, but they can still do some of the things that we did and in trying to make those opportunities for yourself and doing a lot of the groundwork.
Oh yeah.
And trying to connect. That's the big one that I'm hearing.
That's it.
So connecting with people at your local, in your local UXPAs or your local associations, your local meetup groups. Some of the meetup groups that some of us, like our UX Chit Chat Hour, we have a lot of newbies that come in now to our UX Chit Chat Hour and they just get some downloads. And those are, like I said, I think it was last week, pieces. Everything that you learn when you're building yourself from UX is a piece. It's that, and the mountain never finishes forming. It just, you just keep adding pieces to it. Experiences from your learning, experiences from things that, that worked and didn't work and the work that you do, everything's a piece and you just keep putting that thing together.
And that's why it takes a certain type of individual to be in this field. Yes. You have to love learning. You have to crave learning. You have to seek it. You have to be proactive. You have to be the person who's like, I think this is interesting. I am going to go out and learn more about this and bring it back to my team and share it with my organization. You have to be that type of individual to really excel in this field. And I think there's some people who see UX as a field where, oh, you get to have this this title and you get to be able to be the go-to person. It's like, that's the benefit of you doing the work, of you taking the time of crafting your practice and devoting to that. And you should not do that work just for that that external benefit of praise and you know, reward. You should do it because you care about it. You found it interesting. And if you don't have that sense that you want to be curious and continue to learn throughout your career, you're not going to enjoy your experience in UX, quite frankly, because it changes all the time. Yes. You got to be able to grow with those changes.
Exactly. We're gonna cover two more things before we wrap up today. One of them has to do with, I know we mentioned this earlier, so we're coming back to it now, inclusive design. You mentioned this as being a huge passion point for you. Break down for us again for the listeners what exactly you're addressing with inclusive design, what kinds of things that you're getting into today. Go ahead. Here's your platform. Go ahead and run with it.
Yeah, definitely. So inclusive design to me is being intentional about the language that is used in the platforms that are created and things like the documentation as well, and also representation. Are we representing diverse voices, diverse perspectives? And then for UX specifically, when we are doing research, when we are doing design work, are we including people who come from different backgrounds and have different ways of seeing the world to make sure that we are understanding how they would use our products and services? And if there's any gaps that we have not uncovered. Also for me, inclusive design is being intentional about accessibility. Is this going to work for someone who may have a impairment with color, perceiving color, for example, or may have an impairment where they're not able to see the UI? And how are we able to make sure that this is experience that they also can navigate successfully and that they can accomplish their goals as well? So I think we really have to be more intentional and aware that we are building products and services and applications for people from different walks of life. and really think about that and advocate for these people and bring them into the process. I love the saying, design with people, not for people. Yeah. So bringing them into the process so that we are indeed meeting their expectations.
Nice. Now I'm going to jump over a different topic here, and this is going to be where we're probably going to wrap up today on this topic alone. I usually ask the question, what advice do you have for up-and-comers in the discipline? But one of the things that we did talk about, we've already talked about building of acumen. We've talked about the type of personality that a person has to have. Two topics that are near and dear to my heart. But when it comes to advice for up-and-comers in the discipline, we talked before the recording started about job seeking. Let's wrap up there today. What are you seeing with job seeking? What types of trends? What type of tips do you have?
Yeah, definitely. So it's messy out there, just to be honest. It's a mess.
Yeah.
But you can navigate it and you can be successful, but you also have to have your antennas up. So being aware that there are many companies who want UX, but don't really understand what UX is. Mm-hmm. So you have to also make sure that you are asking questions of the interviewers about their UX maturity, asking them questions about how does UX function with the rest of the business, with product management, with engineering, how is UX seeing return on the investments of their time and resources? Is there a budget for UX research? It's amazing. There's some places they don't have a budget for UX research. It's like, okay. So understanding what the company believes UX is and those expectations, and not just reading what's on the job description. So really being prepared to ask those types of questions. Also be aware of possible unethical interviewing. So there are definitely organizations that are asking people to do actual UX work, design a product that they actually have at their company, research something related to their products at their companies. Hey, like if you want to set up a consulting agreement and have a 2-week short-term agreement, that's one thing. But it is unethical to have someone who is interviewing for your company as a requirement of that process for them to do work for your products. So that is something that I think a lot of people need to make sure that they are aware of. And when you hear that, say, hey, you know, that is something that it's not typical and it's not something that you need to do as you are job searching for your role. You have a portfolio, you walk through your portfolio, you answer any questions that they have about that, but just make sure that you're not getting taken advantage of in this process as well.
Yep. I've had some bad experiences right there. Even when they are not trying to get you to do work, I have personally, my take on it is that design exercises are not a really good way to evaluate talent. They are one of the most, they're very common, but they're also, I mean, and there's way, I got to say this too. There's ways to do something that's similar to get what you're trying to get or learn what you're trying to learn about a candidate. I had an interview once where someone, they just got into, it wasn't like a real exercise. It was just like a faux kind of how would we communicate? What would we do here? And we saw, it was almost like we were shooting a movie and we kept saying, okay, cut. And then we would dialogue about something and then action and we get back into it. And that was actually sort of smart because it was a design exercise that wasn't a design exercise. They were just trying to get an idea of how I communicated, the types of questions I might ask or things of that nature. And it wasn't a bad experience.
Did you know that in advance? Did they tell you that this is how it's going to, right? So that's kind of like, iffy, like you guys on the spot,
I did cringe when I heard design exercise because of what I know about design exercises and how I've never really seen one that worked ever. And another time I did one, they had me do an exercise. I had all of 5 minutes to digest what was going on. and then the next 25 minutes to put something together.
It's totally unrealistic.
And that's exactly what I was about to say. It is so unrealistic. You're trying to judge whether or not a person, whether or not you want to hire a person based on circumstances, scenarios that are completely inappropriate and inaccurate. How can you make an accurate judgment based on an inaccurate exercise?
Yeah.
And then the people who are doing it call themselves UXers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an ethical problem in my book. And I would hope that people would stop doing that. I also got to say this comes to mind. So I'm going to throw this out there, and I like ruffling feathers. So here we go again. I don't really like it. I'm just willing to do it. I just say that to make a joke out of it. But people who have folks do design exercises, my evaluation of the many people I've seen that do it, they have people to do design exercises because they don't know how to evaluate talent.
That's it. That's absolutely it. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And some kind of way they've decided, it's almost like they all went to a summit and made this decision, and they all went back to their employers. I don't know how to evaluate talent, so let's do this. It's a bad thing to do. It doesn't really give you what you need. You should be able to talk to people, draw out the honesty in them the best way you can.
Ask questions, interview. Yes. Yeah.
And then judge people based on that. But these faux exercises, even portfolio evaluation, I'm about to do a series called What's the Problem with Portfolios? Because they really didn't belong in UX. Portfolios got brought into UX on a whim. Because people who were confusing UX with UI thought that, okay, well, that UI person has a portfolio, so let me get a portfolio from this UX person. And that's why everybody's pulling their hair out about portfolios, because it's still dysfunctional. It's a dysfunctional mechanism when it comes to evaluating talent. Talk to people, find out, ask questions, find out what they are, find out who they are, do your best at it. And that's the best you can do. But these design exercises, they're for the birds. They gotta go.
Yeah, I will say I do like seeing, because I've been on the other side where I've been on committees where we were hiring and bringing in UX talent as well. I do like seeing the portfolios as a way to have the person who's interviewing walk through their thought process.
Storytelling, yes. That's exactly. What I love.
Exactly. Show me a case study. Show me. What was the problem? How did you address the problem? How did you do your discovery research? Yep. Who did you work with? Who did you go seek for more information? Tell me how you achieved this outcome.
Yeah.
Tell me that.
As a matter of fact, it's funny, and some people might get a laugh out of this. I've been a hiring manager in the past when I was a manager at Bosch, and I bring in people, they bring their portfolios, but I never told any. I told people later, when we came to know each other later on, you know, I never really paid attention to your portfolio. I just wanted you to know that. I wanted to see your storytelling. I wanted to see how well you interacted. I couldn't care less about your portfolio. I really couldn't, for the same reasons I just mentioned earlier, because if anything, if the portfolio is too pretty, I don't care. I really don't care about that now. Because UX people are not responsible for the presentation layer. So if it's really, really pretty, I'm going to look at the UX of your portfolio. But other than that, I'm not really that concerned. I'm more concerned about how the person is going to present themselves as we're dialoguing. That's what's most important.
If your focus is in research and strategy and interaction design, you're not doing the pretty pieces. You're trying to understand how this complex system works, and you're trying to understand your users. There's not a lot to show for that. So being able to like tell the story and walk people through the beginning, middle, and end.
Yep.
What's the problem? How did you and your team address the problem? And what was your solution in achieving the outcome that was a benefit for your users? So that's really the heart of it. Walk through that.
And I thought I should explain too, because somebody is going to be thinking, and I'm going to get an email, so I'm going to head the email off at the pass. Darren, why is it that you're more interested in that stuff? Because when you start to do the work, guess what you're going to be doing? Interacting with people.
That's it.
You're going to be telling stories. Yeah. You're going to be explaining things. So I want to see how well you do that during the interview process.
And you know, that stems another concept of why people who come from different careers make good UX people.
Yeah.
I came from communications and from more of like a marketing background, but those skills are important when you are doing UX research and you are building connections and you are identifying your different stakeholders and doing a SWOT analysis and trying to understand, like, who are my competitors in this area? How can we understand what the needs of our users and the needs of the company and the business is as well?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that's great for another reason. I'm really excited about people who transition into UX. Mm-hmm. I did an episode on it.
Okay.
And people, you know, you're not going to just come into UX and then you're just solely reliant upon what you learn as you're coming into UX. I did a Medium post called...
Have some lived experience. Do something else for a while.
Yes. I did a post called, What Flavor Are You? And where, what have you done before you come into UX? Even if you've never done this before, folks in the audience, if you've never done this before, this exercise is worth it. What were you before you were a UXer?
Yeah.
List the things out and start to look at the skills and the different factors and principles and techniques and things that you did in all those other roles that you had, because the chances are highly likely that many of the things that you did in that prior life, so to speak, are things that will benefit you on the UX side of things. It's not all about the wireframes. It's not all about the prototypes. It's not all about your the different methods and techniques and things that we do. There are a lot of things. Sales. I was in sales before. Does that come into play with UX? You better believe it.
You got to get that buy-in. Absolutely. Yes. Your stakeholders. Yes. Yes, buddy.
I was a customer support representative. Does that come in handy? Yes. Mm-hmm. I was a desktop support person, the person that came out to work on your PC. Does that come in handy? Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are so many things that come into play, and what comes from our past helps make each one of us also unique.
Exactly.
As a UX practitioner, that helps us to bring more value to the table today. So, yep, great points. Great points. We're going to wrap up here, though. Thank you again, Shanae, for taking the time to talk to me today. I love hearing people's stories. I think people need to hear the stories. There's a million of them out there, and we need to get those stories out there to help people to sort of settle themselves as they enter into the discipline, as they are still settling in to the discipline, as they're transitioning, as they're trying to get an understanding, get their bearings on how things are going on in this world of UX, whether it's new or not. It's good to hear everybody's stories, and it helps us to have those aha moments, and it gives us a little bit more stability and a bit more confidence and a bit more joy about what we do as we
That's
go forward.
That's right. We need to have that inspiration and that hope. And some days are really, really tough. So it's good to know that we have this community and that there are always going to be, you know, people and resources that are going to be there to support you.
Yes.
And that you can contact when you get stuck. Like, we all have UX mentors, and we all have been able to lean on those people. And, you know, this is one of the things I really do love about the UX community, that we are here for each other, and just happy to be on the podcast and love what you're doing, Darren.
Thank you. And I got to throw this in there too. I never gave my full formal thank you. I'm in 97 things that every practitioner, UX practitioner, should know because of this woman right here.
Oh, sweet.
She reached out. She said, "You got to have Darren in this book." And they reached out, and it was a joy to be a part of that. I keep it right here so that I can always show it to people when I'm doing different things. So I actually showed it to somebody on a meeting this morning. So it's thank you for that opportunity. Thinking of me and including me on that. I love giving back to the UX community, and the UX community is going to be what we make it. And that's why I think we work so hard to do what we do. So. Thank you again, Shanae, reach out. Where can people connect with you, Shanae? Where can they find you? Where are you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn, Shanae Chapman. Also on Twitter as Nerdy Diva Design. And my website is nerdydiva.com.
Right. All right. So thank you again. Appreciate it. And thank you again.
I'm happy that worked out. I'm so happy that you're able to get into the book and share your expertise as well. I mean, that's what that building relationships is all about.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Well, thanks everybody for taking the time to join us on today. We appreciate you as always. Connect with Shanae out there in the resources she just gave you. But that's it, folks. That's all the time we have for today. So until next time, this is the host of the World of UX, Darren Hood, signing off. Happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.